Thursday, April 3rd, 9:05 a.m. A quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is on the minutes. One second. That's not that guy's name. We are going to make one correction. The Vice President of Finance for Minnesota Hospital Association, there's an error in the spelling of his last name. We will correct that. So that's a correction. And so are there any other corrections or additions? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as corrected. Not your fault. First item on our agenda is Senate File 2754, Senator Kupick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If it would be okay with you, I have an author's amendment, yes. A2, that would get the bill in the order, yes. I would like it to be.
Senator Housechild offers the A2 amendment. It is in your packets. All those in favor, please say aye. We'll try that again. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Kupick.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of opening remarks, and then I'll go through the bill. Senate File 2754 is a border city enterprise zone. It is a bill, the program to better reflect today's economy. The Minnesota legislature established the Border City Enterprise Zone programs for four cities along the North Dakota border and one along the South Dakota border to empower them to be better, to better compete with immediately adjacent communities in those border states. For decades, this program has been critical to help these communities retain, attract businesses that may have otherwise crossed over the river or the border in the South Dakota case. This bill in front of you today, because the key features of this program have been in place for decades with only minor revisions. So Senate File 2754 reflects the collaboration between the border cities to present the legislature with modifications to the program that they feel will improve the competitiveness in a changing economy. The bill requests a funding increase and policy changes to assist these five cities to provide more level playing field. So to the bill itself, in section one, there is an increase in the annual appropriation to the program from $750,000 to $1.5 million. In section two, increases the income tax credit border cities can provide to employers within a border city zone from $3,000 to $5,000 per employee per year. It also eliminates geographic restrictions on the size of the border city zones that cities can establish. This is a change that conforms with Section 4 later in the bill, which eliminates the limitation sizes of those zones. We also, in Section 2, it adds reimbursements for land acquisition costs for business expansion as an eligible use of program dollars where the city determines that expansion is necessary to prevent that business from relocating outside of the state. In Section 3, it eliminates restrictions that have made the program difficult for some businesses to qualify, including restrictions on service and experience-based businesses. This would also eliminate a restriction that has made it problematic for franchise-based businesses to qualify for this benefit. And with the author's amendment too, we are striking portions of Section 4. This also provides, in Section 4, it provides that the cities of Dilworth, Moorhead, and Ortonville may designate all or any part of the city as a zone, and this would conform with the policy that currently applies to East Grand Forks and to Breckenridge so that all the cities would have the same rules to play under. And then also with the author's amendment, we're repealing Section 5 of the bill, which in particular 469.171 subdivision 6A, which discusses benefits that can be provided outside of the zone, which would no longer be necessary if the changes proposed in Section 4, which we put in, were adopted.
Senator Kupick, I actually did read over your bill last night, and I am so impressed with the attention that you're giving to modernizing, is the way I look at it, modernizing the impact and the benefit to the border cities, and I'm for the benefit of all, I am very impressed with your second author, and whose district is takes into account East Grand Forks, and I appreciated also the materials that you provided. I see the mayor of Moorhead is here, is going to speak about them, but in particular, I thought the I don't know who did it, but this handout that's in there was very, very informative of the impact over the years, and what challenges the border cities have. And although it is very possible, and it has happened to me, when I thought I was in Moorhead, I was actually at a restaurant in Fargo. And I apologize for that, but it just happened. So are there questions for...
And I do have two testifiers online, too, Beth.
Are there questions? Yeah, we'll have... Okay. We'll have the testimony, and then we'll questions for members, and are they? This person. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
So actually, Lisa Bodie is here just to answer questions. The mayor should be online.
I was confused, obviously. Online, we have Mayor Carlson. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
If you would welcome, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Thank you so much, everyone. I am Mayor of Moorhead, Mayor Shelley Carlson. And thank you, Chair Rest and members of the Tax Committee, for hearing Senate File 2754. Which is a request to modify the Border Cities Enterprise Zone program. And Senator Rest, no worries about accidentally being at a restaurant in Fargo. My own family members, when they come to visit, sometimes end up in that situation as well. But I also want to extend gratitude to Senator Kupek and Senator Johnson for co-authoring this bill. A version of the Border Cities program has been in place since the 1980s. Obviously, a lot has changed since then, but the policy differences between Minnesota and North Dakota have not. North Dakota has increased its oil production and used the resulting revenue to offset property and income taxes. Fargo and West Fargo are using sales taxes for economic development incentives, flood control, transportation, and other forms of infrastructure projects. Minnesota has implemented additional benefits for our workforce, but these benefits have expenses that North Dakota businesses do not have to pay. Businesses know that they may pay more to operate in Minnesota, and our economic development teams use every tool at their disposal to support them every step of the way. But the current tools available to us don't provide the flexibility that we need in today's economy. Senate File 2754 requests the flexibility we need in those tools, allows us to use those tools citywide, and seeks additional funding for the Enterprise Zone program. These tools will help us to attract services, restaurants, and experience-based businesses that our community is demanding, quite vocally, may I add, and that will make our redevelopment successful. For example, a long-standing chiropractic business, which was displaced by the redevelopment of our Moorhead Center Mall, is building a new building in our downtown, which we are thrilled about, a main-level business with three stories of housing above.
Excuse me.
They are expanding their service offerings to include physical and massage therapy and other health-related services. However, the current Border Cities program restrictions have led to conflicting interpretations and administrative confusion, creating uncertainty about whether that business and others are eligible for incentives. Small businesses like that are our lifeblood. We want and need to keep them in Moorhead and in Minnesota, and this bill would help us to do that. So thank you for your consideration, and I stand for questions.
Thank you. The next text of hire is the Economic Development Director for East Grand Forks, Ms. Brockling.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Maggie Brockling, and I serve as the Economic Development Director at the City of East Grand Forks. I am here to express the City of East Grand Forks support for the Senate File 2754. We are a city of over 9,000 people directly across the Red River of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and that city has about 59,000 people. The Border Cities program assists in making Minnesota communities like ours competitive with North Dakota's lower tax rates and looser regulations. So far, the program has helped retain approximately 212 businesses since the program's inception and retained about 270 jobs while adding 260 new jobs per our 2023 reporting. Past uses have included offsetting the property taxes for the businesses to expand their services, construct new facilities, and invest in new technology. The city has grown about 33% since the Border Cities program has been implemented, and we want to keep growing our businesses and supporting a larger population. The city and our partners in the border communities are seeking your consideration to be more inclusive with the program by adding other industries such as recreation, hospitality, leisure, and fitness-based businesses which support the tax base and provide jobs, as well as contribute to a healthy economy and community. It's a big loss for our community when a company chooses to relocate across the river to North Dakota due to different incentive programs and financial reasons. I previously worked at the local government in Grand Forks and saw firsthand how some of the tools and advantages that they have to their disposal are more accessible. For example, the City of Grand Forks has a growth fund, which receives funding from the state through a local sales tax and financial support from the Bank of North Dakota. This fund through the Border Cities is currently looking to create, the growth fund is currently looking to create a new movie theater in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Unfortunately, East Grand Forks has an existing movie theater, which does exceptionally well and has garnered over 220,000 attendees last year. So in addition to a new theater in North Dakota would lead to a market supersaturation and would cause the East Grand Forks Theater to drastically have to reduce the number of showrooms to stay viable. As a result, the community amenity and the dollars generated move across the border, and the current restrictions in the Border Cities program leave East Grand Forks without the tools to help navigate this competitive environment. That's just one example of the benefits enabled by the Senate File 2754. Expanding the qualifying businesses would help in retaining and growing our existing businesses while enticing new ones to our community. Thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to testify. I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions or comments for either witness? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Senator Kupek, what does the need for this type of tax relief for border cities say about our competitiveness with neighboring states?
Senator Kupek.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first, I would say if we had a lot of oil revenue, we would probably be a lot more competitive to our neighbor to the west. Maybe the helium up in Senator Hochschild's district will provide us with that kind of revenue into the future. But we are. It is a little bit unfair because it is a little bit of apples to oranges. They have a much larger revenue stream. I will also say they have a state bank, which also allows them to do a lot of very creative things that we can't do on Minnesota's side. If we had a state bank, it's an interesting throwback to a much earlier time. But I think it is a little bit difficult to compare the two when they do have that much larger revenue source.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, let's move south a little bit then. Let's go to South Dakota, which is my border, Dakota. And there are two homegrown businesses that had their start in Luverne, Luverne Fire Apparatus, Luverne Truck Equipment. Mm-hmm. They had approximately 60 to 80 employees, and when they became under the umbrella of one single ownership, and they grew to 250. The trouble is that that growth happened in Brandon, South Dakota. So South Dakota may not have oil, but they also have no income tax. And at one point, they had higher property taxes than we do. And that's now we've evened up actually on that. So would you say, Madam Chair and Senator Kupek, would you say that perhaps this is a type of credit that should be expanded to other areas of the state?
Senator Kupek?
Well, that is, I guess, the prerogative of the tax committee here, whether they want to do that or not. You know, the border city legislation, I think, has been, we're in a unique situation because we are bigger cities that are on the border here. I think, you know, if there are other places that want to try to bring forth legislation, that's up to them to try to do that. And I will say, you know, the other side of the coin is, too, that there are, and I think a lot of people who live in our community realize that Minnesota is a higher tax state, but they also, that there are more services that they do get for those taxes. So that's also a consideration when you look at that. Certainly in our area, the population flow has been from actually North Dakota into Minnesota. So the actual residents see some benefit and come across the border in our direction.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, from my experience, obviously I keep in contact with many people who left Minnesota and live either in South Dakota or Iowa. And I said to them, so how is the quality of life between the two states? And they said, you know, we have a really hard time telling any difference. So with that, I will stop my line of questioning, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator Weber. I will note on this chart, when you talk about larger cities, Ortonville is just it's hardly a period. I mean, it's hardly a dot, but it's included, as well as Breckenridge. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are we going to hear the same speech?
No, I think it's a really important speech to have because
I'm not teasing.
I support border communities. I live in a border community. I represent a district that borders both Wisconsin and Iowa. And what we're seeing right now in Minnesota is we're seeing folks leave the state. If you look at the numbers, there's net migration, people leaving the state of Minnesota. And when you look at that, it's typically our seniors who are looking to retire in other states. It's high net worth individuals who are leaving our states. It's small business owners, medium-sized business owners, large business owners that are leaving our state. And what's even more concerning, Madam Chair and members, is if you look at the larger companies that we have in the state of Minnesota, and if you look at where they're expanding, if they're expanding, chances are they're expanding outside the state of Minnesota. And it's because we have higher taxes, we have more regulatory burdens on businesses of all sizes. So I appreciate this conversation, but I think it's our responsibility as a tax committee to have a much larger conversation about the tax structure in the state of Minnesota. And we had a few bills up last week or the week before that were looking to increase the income tax rates and the corporate income tax rates here in Minnesota. And I believe that's moving in the wrong direction. If we want to incentivize businesses, if we want people to, first of all, stay in Minnesota, but ultimately move to Minnesota, we need to look at that tax structure and that regulatory structure here in Minnesota. So while I appreciate supporting border communities, which I certainly do, I think we need to have a much larger conversation about why people are leaving the state of Minnesota and what we can do to encourage them to stay here and then ultimately have more people move here.
Thank you, Senator Miller. I do believe that Senator Kupek mentioned, however, that in the in the counties or the areas around Morehead that there is a net increase in population from outside of Minnesota. And the demographers and people that look at that are surprised, as would I be, I guess, that it is young people who are moving into the areas along our western borders. And it's quite frankly confounding, because I think most of us accept the description of our population growth or loss exactly as you made it, Senator Miller, except it's just not true everywhere. And there are things that attract people to come to Minnesota. And again, I think the most surprising one is that it is young people who come here or who go to school here and stay here, and that Morehead is one of the communities that they choose to be a part of. Senator Miller, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's fantastic that if Morehead is experiencing folks coming in from other states, that's great. But the fact is, if you look at the numbers statewide,
no, absolutely agree.
There are more people leaving the state of Minnesota than are moving here. And that's really concerning, especially if you look at the budget situation that we're in. And we've talked about this multiple times on this committee, that we when we look at budgets and we do forecasts, it's not static forecasting, which I think is even more concerning, because if you look at the numbers of folks leaving and who those people are, I think it puts our long-term budget situation in even more difficult situation. So, again, a broader conversation to have, sure. but it is concerning the overall number of people leaving the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Miller. And maybe we can get whoever keeps those numbers, state demographer or whatever, and take a look at what's happened in the last 3-4 years, and where they see that out migration going, and those areas in the state that, on the other hand, are magnets for people coming to Minnesota. Senator, are you? Okay, Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the good discussion. Senator Kupick, you said a lot of things that I think so many of us agree with, and I think that your bill and your testifiers have really pointed out the importance of tax policy in states, and also the handout. The map says a lot. You can see a lot
it's really good.
Graphics. And I will tell you, it reminds me of some of my pilot friends. 4 years actually, have told me that when they fly over this area, it's just a dramatic difference between the east side of the river and the west side of the river. You can see it from the air, how tax policy in this case has impacted economic growth. So I understand why you brought this bill. It's been, as you noted, I think, It's been around since for a long time. I was trying to think about the first time I heard about this. It was a number of years ago. And you mentioned the importance of incentives, competitiveness, keeping the employers, the jobs, retaining those, and new jobs. That was a good number as well, 250 new jobs. But I've read through the bill, and there's a number of tax credits, which I think are so important. And the question that I would have is similar to what my colleagues have said. Why are we doing this on just one small segment of the state? I think it's, I don't know if there are other bills like this in other states where you try tax policy to influence a certain segment of the state. But let's just leave that there and look at, and we can say that this has been successful. And so with that, Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Okay.
I'm sorry, it's an oral amendment, Madam Chair.
An oral amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, there are a number of changes that would be needed to, I think the intent of the amendment is to make the program statewide. So on line 1.2, strike the border. On 1.3, strike city. 1.8, strike border city. 1.10, strike border city. Also on 1.10, strike on the western and insert in. 1.11, strike border of. 1.22, strike a border city and insert an. 4.4, Madam Chair and members, moving to page 4. On 4.4, strike the following border cities and insert any city. Strike line 4.6. On line 4.7, strike everything before between. 4.8, delete the new language. Strike line 4.9. On 4.10, strike everything before between. 4.11, delete the new language. 4.12, strike everything before between. And 4.13, delete the new language.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Kupak?
Well, Madam Chair, I would say that this probably would greatly drive up the price tag, first of all, on this bill. And I think I appreciate these discussions about lowering taxes and business incentives across the state. And I think for this committee, that might be, to have those discussions and introduce more legislation. I do think, on this, that the border cities are a unique situation to the state that is maybe different than, say, if you were in the middle of the state in Brainerd. So I would say I would not be in favor of this, as it would, greatly, first of all, blow up the cost of this bill to begin with. And I do think that the border cities have a unique thing. But I think if your committee wants to take up a discussion of that, that is at your discretion. But I would like to just, kind of focus on what we're focused on here.
Well, thank you, Senator Kupak, and thank you, Senator Nelson. This obviously is a huge amendment. It should have been in writing, and I'm not going to support it either, but I do encourage you to work with staff and have your have a more comprehensive bill. If you do, we'll hear it, and we'll just see how much it costs. And I would ask you, we can take a vote on it, but I would ask you to withdraw the amendment.
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
I appreciate the conversation. I do want to just add one thing, though. I do not think it would blow up the budget because the amount allocated remains the same. The question is, it wouldn't go as far for certain cities if, in fact, it were available statewide. And I am somewhat torn in withdrawing the amendment because I think it is a very valuable discussion that we have to have in this state about tax competitiveness. And I will, at this moment, knowing that, Madam Chair, would you explain to me again what, if I were to withdraw this amendment, what were you suggesting? I didn't hear all that you mentioned.
Your oral amendment is very extensive. We actually have the right to ask for an amendment like this to be in writing. I won't do that because I think the intent is very clear. but if you withdraw the amendment and work with staff to have a statewide bill, I've just said I will hear it.
Oh, Madam Chair, thank you for clarifying that and for the good discussion. And I will work with staff, I will withdraw the amendment, and I will look forward to working, having a hearing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. The oral amendment is withdrawn. Are there other questions or comments for Senator Kupak? Seeing none, Senate File 2754 as amended will be laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Absolutely. Thank you. Senate File 1428, Senator Weber. Senator Weber brings us Senate File 1428.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Weber.
Appreciate you hearing this bill. It's a very simple bill. If we go into Senate File 1428, the changes basically boil around definitions. Lines 1.10, 1.11, and 12. Deal with a limited liability company owned by an individual or limited liability company owned by up to two individuals who are spouses or family members. And if we then go that's the only change.
Yep, that's it.
That's the only change. And basically, as we've talked about before, today's family farms have incorporated newer types of ownership entities, including limited liability corporations and or partnerships. And this would allow them to qualify for this credit. And we do have a revenue estimate from the department that includes the kind of estimate you like this year, which is zero. So.
Yes, I know. I'm smiling.
And then I have Hunter Peterson from the Farm Bureau here to testify as well.
Okay. We'll draw members' attention, even though it's zeros, to the revenue estimate for more detail about the program itself. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Hunter Peterson, and I serve as the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau. Just want to correct the record for the agenda. It does say I'm with Farmers Union, and while they are very good friends of mine, Mr. Lori is sitting back there. So, with that, Madam Chair, appreciate Senator Weber bringing the bill forward. Like you said, it's a pretty simple change. It's a narrow, tailored expansion of how the eligibility for this works. And, you know, as far as why would a beginning farmer choose to structure their farm as an LLC? You know, there's liability protection for your personal assets that come with that, shielding those from business debts, lawsuits. Also helps with succession planning, which is, you know, another topic that we've covered in this committee in the past. So keeping that farm in the family, passing on to a family member someday is another reason why a farmer might opt to structure their farm as an LLC. With that, Madam Chair, again, I'd like to thank Senator Weber and his bipartisan co-authors, Senators Westrum, Putnam, Gustafson, and Kupak. And I appreciate you hearing the bill today, Madam Chair, and I'd ask for the committee support.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Senator Weber, when the bill was heard in the Ag Committee, and I read as it passed that it passed as amended, and I was wondering what change did the Ag Committee make, if you could tell us what change did they make to the bill as introduced? I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, the amendment actually dealt with the definition, and it included originally was a limited liability company, and we included then up to two individuals who are spouses or family members.
And Madam Chair, I could add a little context as to why
we did
that.
Mr. Peterson.
Yeah. So the reason, Madam Chair, that we decided to add that was when we heard the bill over in the other body, in their agriculture committee, that was a discussion that was brought up as far as what if you had, you know, a husband and wife who wanted to farm together, beginning farmers as an LLC, or what if you had two brothers who wanted to go into the enterprise together. So that was the reason why we made that change.
I see. Okay. Are there any questions or comments for Senator Weber or Mr. Peterson? Seeing none, Senate File 1428 is laid over.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Senate File 2108, Senator Hochschild. Welcome to the committee, Senator Hochschild. We have before us Senate File 2108. If you would explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We've had a lot of conversations about PILT over the last couple of years, and obviously we know that there is a proposal on the table to cut PILT substantially. These are payments in lieu of taxes on public lands, which predominantly exist in northern and central Minnesota. What this legislation is looking at doing is accounting for the fact that much of the public lands in northern and central Minnesota are quite different, right? It's not just public lands, there's a lot of lakeshore land. And the payment in lieu of tax payments are the same regardless of what that might be. And so what this bill is trying to get at is increasing the payments for lakeshore land, which administered by the state or county. And so it would increase the payments for lakeshore land to $5 and, well, 5.133 per acre, or 3/4 of 1% paid to acquired natural resource land. The bill also requires payments to townships of 10% for the payment received for other lakeshore land located in their township. So, Madam Chair, what we're trying to get at here is the fact that lakeshore land should be considered different than other public lands, and that we account for that increased value, particularly in northern and central Minnesota. And with that, Madam Chair, there's a number of testifiers who can give more details on the proposal, and we can answer questions from there.
Okay, I will direct members' attention to the revenue estimate that also explains the impact on the general fund of this bill, and would seem to me also that the it's a bit scalable. Senator Hochschild, I mean, the $3 per acre payment, and then it, with this special land to make it 5.133 per acre, et cetera, is what brings the cost to where it is. Just so we're all aware of that.
Yep.
Any other questions or observations before I call on the start calling on the witnesses? Seeing none, Commissioner, if you'd identify yourself for the record, we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Jugovich. I'm a St. Louis County Commissioner, District 7. I live in Chisholm. I appreciate the time today. Just wanted to touch base with you a little bit, and again, so happy I could get here today. We had a little bit of rough weather up north, but you're not seeing the effects. But
it's better. It's better down here today. Not every day, but today.
We'll take no snow any day.
Drive safely on your way home, certainly.
And I wanted to touch you base again with you about the proposal for cuts in the PILT. And what we're seeing, if you see the handout, I believe you have the handout, out of the governor's proposal, we are looking at, for the five northern counties, we are looking at about 4.9 out of 9.5. And that is just, that's too much. It's, we cannot afford that. And what we're looking at in St. Louis County on its own, I can't speak for the rest, but we're looking at about 1.9 million in St. Louis County, which puts us over a levy point to start immediately. Before we start a budgeting process, we're $1.9 million down. I think it's important we take a look, as Senator Hochschild said, at Lakeshore property. There's a number of things and components that go into this. We have other testifiers that can speak directly to this. One of the commissioners that will speak, Commissioner McDonald, a lot of this is in his district, and I'm kind of the junior varsity today. But I definitely want to have everyone have opportunities to speak directly with them. So I appreciate your time, and
we're certainly going to allow that and welcome it. Thank you, Commissioner. Any comments for the commissioner? Then we would welcome Mr. Henderson.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Joe Henderson. I am the Lands and Minerals Division Director for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. As earlier laid out, you know, PILT is paid for DNR administered land and tax forfeited land based on types of land and their acreages multiplied by percentages of appraised value or monetary multipliers set out in Minnesota Statute 477. The DNR manages over 5 million acres of land, and it tracks its holdings in a database called the Lands Record System, or LRS. Currently, the Lands Record System does not track land according to whether it abuts a lake. The DNR is unable to run a computer query to determine how many acres it administers, which would fall into this new other lakeshore land type called out in this bill. For the DNR to implement this bill, the counties would need to provide the DNR with the acreage on the tax forfeited land abutting the lakes. And for other land classifications, including school trust land, the DNR would need to calculate the acreage of parcels that abut lakes. The DNR currently lacks all the information needed to do most of this work. Since the bill gives the county a choice of using acreages multiplied by either the percentages of appraised value or the monetary multipliers in statute, the DNR would also need to update estimates of appraised value or market value from the county assessors on school trust lands abutting lakes. In closing, the DNR would need additional information about the parcels it manages for PILT in order to calculate the acreages of other lakeshore land. To track this information going forward, the DNR would need to rebuild its land record systems or acquire a new database. These costs are not accounted for necessarily in this bill. The DNR is willing, of course, to meet with authors and other interested parties to further discuss the bill and the complexities that it would raise for the DNR and the counties. Thank you for considering our comments.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Go right ahead, Senator Hochschild.
The DNR is probably right. I think we should just increase all the PILT land to $5 and 133. So.
Okay. We'll consider that later. any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Henderson. Next, Mr. McDonald. Commissioner McDonald is on the is online. And Commissioner Djukovic, I really appreciated your letter and the explanations that you gave in it, and also providing them the maps. That it's amazing how much visuals, the impact that visuals have on us, and maps, sometimes more than the words used to describe them. So I appreciate your
Thank you, Madam Chair. My mother was a teacher for 34 years, and she said visual learning was one of the best components she had.
Indeed.
For teaching.
Commissioner McDonald, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members, good morning. My name is Paul McDonald, and I am a St. Louis County Commissioner and also the Vice Chair of the Northern Counties Coalition. Today, I want to talk to you about the challenges that Northern Minnesota counties are up against with nearly all the tax forfeited lands and school trust lands located in just 20 northern counties. We were here with, in front of this committee in 2023 regarding PILT, and I want to thank the chair and the committee members for being there for us too. 2 years ago, Senator Hochschild asked for a shot in the arm for PILT, and this committee delivered on everything requested, including a Department of Revenue study on the Lakeshore value and how this valuable property should be compensated moving forward. The committee knows the results of this study. The study shows that the lands are worth much more than the $3 per acre, and in fact are worth 5 to 10 times more. The study also concluded that the lakeshore is much more valuable than the natural resource land that is currently in the same category as this lakeshore land. Other areas are already getting higher payments, and the example of this are the acquired acres part. There is a solution to this problem that was first identified almost 25 years ago. We as northern counties are not asking for the world with this bill. We are just asking to move from $3 to $5.133 per acre. As a result, Senator Hochschild's bill will finally fix this inequity and provide fairness to northern counties with some badly needed revenue from lost tax base. I thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. And I wish I could have been there in person, which I normally do, but the weather has me snowed in up in Ely. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions or comments for Commissioner McDonald? Then we'll move to Ben Thomas, the Deputy Assessor for St. Louis County. Mr. Thomas.
Chair Rest and members of the committee, my name is Ben Thomas. I am the Deputy County Assessor for St. Louis County. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on behalf of St. Louis County. St. Louis County has a total of 1,441,781 acres of PILT lands. Of these acres, 93,924 acres have shoreline at an estimated value of $177,412,700 or $1,889 per acre. The remaining 1,347,857 other non-shoreline acres have an estimated value of $990,621,300 or $735 per acre. These are a lot of numbers. Clearly, the shoreline acres have a much higher value per acre than non-shoreline acres. Yet the PILT payments on all these acres have remained the same at $3 per acre. Comparing these PILT payments to potential property taxes that would be raised if these lands were privately owned is eye-opening. These shoreline acres in St. Louis County taxed at a typical rural vacant land effective tax rate of 1% would yield $1,774,127 in property taxes. In contrast, the current PILT payment of $3 per acre yields a total of $281,772 on these acres. The proposed provisions in Senate File 2108 to raise the PILT payment on shoreline lands from $3 per acre to a greater of 0.75% of estimated market value or $5.13 an acre would be a step in the right direction for counties that have large amounts of this type of tax-exempt land. I would also add that based on a comment from an earlier testifier that St. Louis County and other counties could easily report which acres are shoreline and which are not shoreline for administering this program and could report that easily to the DNR. I join with others here today who urge you to act favorably on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Assessor, I'm sorry.
A question for the assessor. I'm curious about the fact that so I understand the difference in the tax value of the land, and so therefore the PILT payment where you're asking to be higher. My question is, how do PILT pay, because one of the things that we've also understood, Senator Hochschild, is your districts don't have the tax revenue for the schools that you would like to see. And so my question is, how do PILT payments, maybe one of you can answer this, how do PILT payments impact school funding? In other words, are any of those PILT payments attributed to schools? Does anybody know that
answer? Senator Hallstrom.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, unless I'm missing something fundamental here, my understanding is that the PILT payments are sent to counties, so it's a county payment for the fact that they manage those public lands and those, I'm forgetting the word, but the when tax forfeited land.
Mm-hmm.
So no, the answer would be no.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Just something that I think we have to have at least be aware of is that, so we're we're looking at over a million acres that are now in PILT and seeking for additional PILT payments for those acres because of the expense, the value of the land. Somehow it seems like we're forgetting the kids. As the state looks to rectify some of these now government-owned tax-exempt properties. So I don't have an amendment, Madam Chair, but I just put that out there for something to consider that if we're thinking about PILT payments in lieu of property taxes and increasing PILT payments, it seems to me we ought to be somehow considering some of that money going to the schools as normal property taxes were. So just a comment.
Senator Hallstrom has a plan for that, too, by the way. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question as it relates to the number of acres that were stated as having lakeshore access. You know, you might have a 10-acre tract of land that has 1,000 feet of shore access. You might have a 400-acre tract of land that has 1,000 feet of shore access. I don't know that all of those 400 acres have the same value, and actually I'm fairly confident that all those 400 acres don't have the same value as those 10 acres. And so has there been any differentiation made as to how far back from the shoreline this additional value would be computed?
Senator Hallstrom, it's a very interesting question.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Weber. It is a very good question, and we did have that study done last year that I think yielded some information, but I'll be honest with you, not really all the information I was looking for, and I think this is maybe one of those questions that we need to dig deeper into and figure out. I don't know if the previous testifier has any information about that, but yeah, definitely something we should look into. Good question.
That's fine.
Thank you, Senator Weber. Anything further? Then Senate File 2108 will be laid over.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Hallstrom also brings the next bill before us, Senate File 2116.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As you all recall, in 2023, we were able to increase local government aid and county program aid by substantial proportions, which went to those local governments to help support the many things that we rely on our local governments to provide. I represent, as you all know, the most rural district in the state, and I have a lot of townships throughout my district, and I know that there's townships all throughout the state as well. What this really does is it addresses the fact that we have not increased township aid since 2014. And given the fact that we have increased aids to other local governments through PILT, as we just talked about, through LGA, through CPA, there is really an inequity happening here for some of our most rural communities and the fact that we have not increased this aid for some time. So this bill would increase the aid from $10 million a year to $11.5 million. It also modifies the town aid formula so that total town aid appropriation is distributed and that no amount is left over. Given that there is a fixed constant in law right now. There are circumstances, for example, in 2025, whereby the total amount is not distributed, so we wanted to make sure we were using the total amount of appropriation. So, Madam Chair, again, I'm on a mission to make sure that we provide equitably for our rural communities, and this is just another example. And I'm hopeful that we're able to address the increase in the payment to the townships, as well as the fact that all of the appropriation is adequately able to be used by our townships. And with that, I do have two testifiers.
Before then, are there questions about the changes that are in in the policy about the bill, and see the amount that would be of town aid, the amount that would be increased in town aid is another million and a half, and the revenue estimate reflects that a little bit less because of interactions.
Right.
So with that, Mr. Granberg Moberg from the Minnesota Association of Townships, if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Granberg Moberg. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'd just like to thank Senator Housechild for his work on this important issue and you, members of the committee, for hearing us. Now, most of the numbers that I'll give you this morning are not the Township Association's numbers. They're the most recent published state reports on the subject that I was able to locate, with a couple of exceptions that I'll aim to highlight. So townships represent approximately 16% of the state of Minnesota. That's about 900,000 people, give or take, pretty roughly. As Senator Housechild mentioned, we get annually about $10 million in local government aid. Now, while that varies from township to township, depending on how the formula plays out, we are looking at a ballpark of about $10 per resident for most townships in the state of Minnesota. By my back-of-the-napkin math, we'd be looking at upping that to closer to $12 to $13 per township resident should this bill pass. Now, by contrast, the equivalent local government aid program annually distributes around $644 million to cities, and that amounts to about $137 per city-dwelling Minnesotan. Now, if townships got township residents got the same proportionally, township local government aid would be, if I'm doing my math correctly, about $123 million instead of about $10 million. That is, this bill would mean that township residents would be within an order of magnitude of their city-dwelling equivalents. We're the most frugal unit of government. We rarely have employees. Increased funds pretty directly benefit our residents by allowing them to focus on the things that matter to them, reducing property tax burdens, increasing quality of life, sustainability of critical services like EMS or fire, or simply just giving us a little bit more to improve the quality of our roads. Now, we understand we're looking at a budget shortfall this year. We understand that hard choices have to be made. Nevertheless, we're just asking for something that's a little bit more fair here. So thank you for your hearing.
Any questions? There's a online testifier, Senator Housechild, Mr. Brian Harrington. Are you there, Mr. Harrington?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Harrington. I'm a supervisor for Eagles Nest Township in St. Louis County, near Ely, so I've been experiencing the snowfall that was alluded to earlier. Our township's annual budget is around $325,000. Townships are being squeezed across the state to pick up more needs for their townships and surrounding areas, such as emergency response and internet services. Eagles Nest maintains a fire department with emergency response teams. Since we now have additional responsibilities for fighting local forest fires, we need a new fire truck called a brush truck. New, these are about $500,000. Used, about $250,000. We might be able to get grants for some of it, but it will still be very expensive and use most of our annual budget. In addition, the board just approved $9,000 for a used ATV to get first responders to emergencies on local ATV and bike trails. Our residents continue to ask for internet services that at this time we still can't afford to bring in. Townships rely on state LGA support to balance our budget. Every dollar helps. I ask you to include SF-2116 in this committee's omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Are there any comments or questions for the testifier? I did note, or we do note, an extremely appropriate picture hanging behind you on the wall, Mr. Harrington. It indeed is an eagle's nest, we believe. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Housechild, I want to understand the reason for changing the formula a little better. And is it because currently you can't, or it's possible not to distribute the whole amount? Is that the reason for the change in the formula? And what will it, what in terms of the townships or a map like we've had before, what's gonna look different in the changes in the formula that you are proposing, other than, as I understand the revenue estimate, it will ensure, first of all, before the amount might be increased, but it will ensure that the current amount, that none of it is left unused. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. It is a little confusing, and I'm gonna try to see if I can explain it, and if council has, you know, any, or fiscal has any modifications to what I'm saying. But my understanding,
Senator Kupek, maybe Mr. Munn can give us a little bit of detail.
Okay, that's fine.
Unless you would like to go ahead.
No, that's fine. That might be just more helpful. Yep.
Madam Chair and members, the current formula is drafted in such a way that it computes a set amount for each township, and the sum of the aid that each township receives doesn't always equal the $10 million appropriation. So what Senator Housechild's bill does is it changes that formula so that it is tied to the appropriation. Each township is still using the same components to calculate their aid, but they receive a percentage of the total aid appropriation so that the entire appropriation is distributed.
And that same approach would be used with an increase in town aid too. So there would be no question that by using that percentage after they've worked the formula that all of it would be used.
Correct.
Okay, that's very helpful. Senator Housechild, thank you. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Go right ahead.
That's what he was going to say what I was going to say. I'm just kidding. he explained it much better than I could have.
Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much,
you.
Senator Housechild. And now the the bill we've all been waiting for. Senate file 2626. But first we're going to lay over 2116. And now we have Senator Drazkowski, Senate file 2626, Senator Drazkowski, better known as the flower child.
I didn't hear all that, Madam Chair. Thank you. It was the flower what?
Child.
Flower child, okay. Yeah. I don't know.
I didn't hear what he said. What did he say?
I did tell Senator Putnam that I'm the eye candy today, if that's helpful.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, thank you for hearing Senate File 2626. And it is about flowers. and you're going to hear from one of my constituents soon. As a matter of fact, and maybe Mr. Laurie could hand this to the members. I've only got one copy, but there was a Star Tribune article yesterday or the day before yesterday about the family, and you can take a look at it as it goes around. And I apologize for not bringing more copies.
If you'd just hold on to it, please.
Okay, I guess we're not going to pass it around. I'll give it to you afterwards or bring it tomorrow or next week, Madam Chair. So I received an email from my constituents, Ms. Koopenbender and her husband, and they, my background's agriculture, Madam Chair, and they talked about their enterprise that they have on their small farm of just under 14 acres in size. They are raising flowers that they cut and then sell in the Twin Cities market in a wholesale marketing approach, and they raise significant money in that enterprise. It is truly an agricultural operation on a very small acreage. Incidentally, I have been working with Senator Putnam, and I would like to thank him for co-authoring the bill, and he is working on another bill that kind of coincides with this. And Madam Chair, Mr. Sylvia and Senator Putnam and I did get in the workshop, and we do have language merging these together, and I think we're close, and we're interested in hearing from you today on this as we go through it. But the bill itself is simple in the wording. If you go to page 4 of the bill, the definition of agricultural products is amended to insert floriculture. If you go to page 5 of the bill, the definition of or language about buildings in agricultural production and their exemption from being classified as commercial under true agricultural operations like this one is included on the bottom of page 5. And the definition of floriculture is on the top of page 6. The bill is effective with tax assessment year 2026 or taxes payable 2027. That is the bill, Madam Chair, and I would like to turn it over to Ms. Koopenbender or Mr. Laurie, whichever is your preference. Okay.
First, are there any questions for Senator Peskovsky? Seeing none, Ms. Koopenbender, if you identify yourself for the record, we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Rust and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Allie Koopenbender. I'm glad to share my support for Senator Drazkowski's bill to allow flower farmers like myself to benefit from agricultural classification. As a member, I'm also glad to share the support of Minnesota Farmers Union. I own a small cut flower farm outside of Mazeppa in Wabasha County. We own just under 14 acres with 2 acres in production and grow exclusively cut flowers for local market, primarily wholesale to florists, but also retail via a bouquet subscription and bulk flower buckets for DIY events. We may be small, but there is serious interest in local flowers, with demand often outpacing supply. We were able to net well over $50,000 per acre last season. This is not a hobby or a backyard garden. It's my family's main source of income. That being said, margins are tight. There are high labor costs associated with this style of farming, and we've been actively investing our profits into building our farm's infrastructure. I'm here today because my farm does not currently qualify for agricultural classification. This is because the Minnesota Department of Revenue's property classification statute does not explicitly list cut flowers or floriculture as an ag product eligible for agricultural property classification. Therefore, the Wabasha County Board of Commissioners denied our appeal to switch from residential to agricultural. Obviously, this is a challenge because we're paying more in property taxes with our residential classification, but there are broader implications to being zoned residential beyond property taxes. As we continue to grow our business, we've added a new workshop space as well as unheated high tunnel or hoop house structures used to extend our growing season. These are impermanent structures with no foundation, just covered in poly. Minnesota climate is erratic and unpredictable during the spring and fall shoulder seasons, and these structures allow us to be able to grow higher quality, healthier flowers sooner in the spring and later into the fall. These structures are how we enhance our profitability as a business. Even though these structures are impermanent and used exclusively towards the production of cut flowers, because we do not have agricultural classification, they do not qualify for agricultural exemption per the county's permitting and zoning department. This means we have to pay a permitting fee and go through building inspection to ensure they're up to Minnesota State Building Code. We've paid thousands in permitting fees because of our current classification. Mind you, we are in a rural part of a rural county and outside of city limits. The barriers to farming are already high, but because we can't get recognized as a farm, the barriers are even higher. The more we develop our land and build our farm's infrastructure, the higher our property taxes become, taxed at the residential rate. Every time we build something, there are permitting fees and building inspections and increased property tax evaluations. The way the statute is currently written, smaller scale farms not growing commodity crops like mine fall through the cracks. I appreciate the committee's continued work to address this, including through Senator Putnam's bill on allowing small farms to qualify for ag homestead. In the end, we're running a profitable farm business and contributing to our local economy. And all we're asking for is to be counted as a farm and enjoy the same benefits as our neighbors. This change would make a big difference to myself and my family and other flower farmers, and I hope it earns your support. I'd like to extend an invitation to all of you to visit our farm, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions you may have. Thank you.
Any questions? Senator Klein.
Madam Chair, not to the bill, but I have to say I was Googling your business while you were speaking, and it looks beautiful. I also just followed you on Instagram. The farm looks amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else?
Can I add something? There are many other flower farmers that are here right now in support of this bill. There's a lot of farmers that are very interested in this being passed.
We welcome them all today. Thank you for coming. Anything else? Then
Madam Chair, if I could.
Druskowski, if you have a final.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, so negligible impact, as you can see in the fiscal note.
Revenue estimate.
Revenue analysis. Thank you, Madam Chair. So one of the things we're looking at and contemplating, and if the committee has any input into this, the Kupenbender's family, they're at nearly 14 acres in size. So they're a little bit greater than that 10-acre limit. It's kind of complicated, and Senator Putnam and I are wrestling with this. So I think we'd be interested in your input on this to make certain, and Senator Putnam has language that allows you to look at a Schedule F and demonstrating that you are an agricultural operation within that 10-acre special part of statute that we have here. It's reflected in the bill. The Kupenbenders are above that. They're at 13.79 acres. So in terms of policy, we could raise that 10 acres up to 15 or 20, or we could even create another tier that would say instead of demonstrating 5,000 of agricultural production, maybe it's 20,000 from 10 acres up to 25 or something like that. I think we'd both be interested in the feedback that the committee has on that.
Well, Senator Druskowski and Senator Putnam, I hope you will figure that out before the omnibus bill chair's mark is before us. Senator Putnam?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Druskowski, for bringing this up. About 7 minutes ago, I wrote to Mr. Sylvia and Ms. Pollack and Mr. Mum to make sure that adjusting the acreage limit would not have significant fiscal consequences. So we're doing our homework.
Okay,
and we'll figure it
great.
Out, but we are committed to making sure,
appreciate
especially
that.
Now that Klein's following you on Instagram, we've got to make sure that your farm is actually one that gets taken care of here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Druskowski. Then Senate File 2626 will be laid over for some further work. Announcements. Committee on Tuesday, April 8th, will start at 9. On Wednesday at 8:30, and there will be no tax committee hearing on Thursday. The Legislative Audit Commission will be meeting in this room at that time. There being no further business before the committee, and then including the newly woke Senator Drazkowski. We're adjourned.